portion of the week is Parashat Mishpatim, and it is on page earlier. Page 417. Page 417. Last week, we spoke about the giving of the Torah. We discussed the Ten Commandments. It's the portion that discusses not only what Hashem said, but also the whole day and what was special about this day, the event and the experience that the Jewish people had at Sinai. It was basically the peak in terms of human experiences. The Jewish people experienced the utmost that a human being can experience in his lifetime. In this week's portion, we have a list of mitzvot, and I want to take a look into the very beginning, at least, of the parasha for this moment, and raise a few questions. Okay, so if you look at page 417, the top of the page, verse number 1. And these are the ordinances that you shall place before them. If you buy a Jewish bondsman, he shall work for 6 years, and in the seventh he shall go free for no charge. So as we see, there is a general statement in verse number 1. These are the ordinances that you shall place before them. And there is really a long list of ordinances. Basically, most of the parasha, besides the last part that we will address soon, most of the parasha is really a list of obligations. Most of them have to do between men and men. Like a person becomes a slave. He can become a slave because either he stole, he's a thief, he took money or possessions from another person and doesn't have the ability to return it, or he's so poor that he cannot sustain himself and he sells himself as a slave in order that somebody else will take care of his needs as an exchange for his work. The second case that a person sells himself is not discussed in our exposition. In our exposition, it's only a person stole money, he doesn't have the money to return to the person that he stole from, and he has to be sold as a slave, and the money that is received from his slavery returns to the person that he stole from. So it's between men and men, discusses slavery. Let's go further to the next page. The Torah discusses what happens if a woman is sold as a slave. I'm going further. Then I'm going to page 421. Right after discussing a slave and a Jewish child, basically, that he sold as a slave, we are going in verse number 12 to another topic. One who strikes a man for that he dies shall surely be put to death. So now we speak about murder, right? And if you go to 14, if a man shall act intentionally against his fellow to kill him, while going from my altar shall you take him to die. So it's again murder. And then when we go to the next verse, right? One who strikes his father or mother shall surely be put to death, and so on. If we take a look of all those topics that we just mentioned, it seems very striking that the previous parsha speaks about the highest level possible, right? For a whole nation for sure to achieve, and even for an individual. And here we are going to situations of murder, of being sold as a slave, of cursing parents or hitting parents. Very, very extreme shift between one and the other, right? And we want to understand, why are these laws written right after the fact that we stood at Mount Sinai and reached the highest level possible? So that's first question that we want to ask today. Now, if you look back to 417, the very beginning of the portion, verse number 1, How does the portion start? The portion starts with the words, and these are the ordinances. Usually you don't start a topic with the word, with the end, ve ele ha-mishpatim. It seems to us that it should be, these are the ordinances. What is the debt? These are the ordinances. And Rashi addresses it, and I want to read to you what Rashi said. Rashi says, whenever it's written, ve, in the beginning of a topic, and, if the topic starts with end, it comes to add something to what was written before, meaning it's a connector to what's written before. So, what's the connection? Why does the Torah want to emphasize the connection here, right, between the previous portion and this portion? So, Rashi says, the same way, and it's a quotation of the Midrash, the same way that those things that were written in Yitro, meaning the Ten Commandments, came from Sinai, the laws that are in this portion, in Mishpatim, are also from Sinai. Very interesting. So the Torah wants to create a connection between the Ten Commandments that were given, obviously, from Sinai, as described in last week's portion, and all the laws that are written here. Now, all laws in the Torah are from Sinai. There is no mitzvah that was not given on Sinai. Here is only a partial list of mitzvot. But it seems that the Torah wants specifically to connect it to Sinai. And that's why it's written right after the giving of the Torah. And the Vav indicates to us that it's not by an accident, that part of the mitzvot were written here, but it's connected to Mount Sinai. And we want to understand in what way is it connected and why exactly this mitzvot, why is it written in this way? Interestingly enough, we already connect this portion to last week's portion. Let's go to the first commandment in Parashat Yitro. And we'll see another connection, very interesting connection. Okay? So if we go to page 407, where the first commandment is written, 407, and you look at verse number 2, where the first commandment is written, the Torah says, I am Hashem your God, who has taken you out of the land of Egypt from the house of slavery. So interestingly enough, at the very, very beginning of the Ten Commandments, the first commandment tells us Hashem is God. And so to speak, Hashem introduces himself as the God who took us out of Egypt. We explained last time why. But the Torah doesn't just say who took you out of Egypt, but the Torah adds from the house of slavery. So we see a connection between the beginning of the Ten Commandments and the beginning of Parashat Mishpatim, both speak about slavery. So obviously, it's a connection, it's an additional connection. So we made two connections between Mishpatim and Yitro. A, Yitro, the Ten Commandments, were said on Sinai, and the laws in Mishpatim were said on Sinai. B, the Ten Commandments start with the concept of slavery, Am Hashem who took you out of the house of slavery, and also the list of ordinances that is written in Mishpatim starts with the concept of slavery. Interestingly enough, and we'll have to explain in both cases why is it so, right? And why is it important to connect the first of the Ten Commandments with the concept of slavery there to Parashat Mishpatim and the concept of slavery as it is discussed there, okay? So that's another question that we want to deal with and understand. And two more. If we start back to Parashat Mishpatim, the first verse, from 17, verse number 1. Moshe is going to give the Jewish people a whole list of mitzvot. What's the language that the Torah usually uses as a preface to Moshe giving the Jewish people mitzvot? Of course, because Hashem told him so. So usually it starts with Vaydaber Hashem el Moshe, Hashem spoke to Moshe, Leimo, saying, to tell the Jewish people. This is not the language here. Here we have a very special language. And these are the ordinances that you shall place before them. What's the meaning of this term, that you shall place before them? And why is it written here out of all other places in the Torah that Moshe gives over a list of mitzvot? And the last question, I know it's a long list, I'll soon sum up, right? And when we'll answer, we'll see that one concept answers all of them, right? But we first have to see what's the basis in the Torah for the concept that I'll give after. After the Torah gives the list of mitzvot, and it's quite long, right? We have in chapter 24, page 441, a topic that I want to see what it is, to identify. So, to Moses, he said, Hashem said to Moses, it's page 441, chapter 24, the beginning of the chapter. Go up to Hashem, you, Aaron, Nadav, and Abihu, and 70 of the elders of Israel, and you shall prostrate yourselves from a distance, and Moses alone shall approach Hashem, but they shall not approach, and the people shall not go up with him. Moses came and told the people all the words of Hashem and all the ordinances, and the entire people responded with one voice, and they said, all the words that Hashem has spoken, we will do. Okay? So, what is it speaking about? The Jewish people are around the mountain. Only Moshe goes up, right? And Hashem warns the others not to go up, and the Jewish people accept. Let's go further. Moses wrote all the words of Hashem. He arose early in the morning and built an altar at the foot of the mountain and 12 pillars for the 12 tribes of Israel. He sent the youth of the children of Israel, and they brought up elevation offerings, and they slaughtered bulls to Hashem, a feast offering to Hashem. Moses took half of the blood and placed it in basins, and half of the blood he threw upon the altar. He took the book of the covenant and read it in earshot of the people, and they said, everything that Hashem had said, we will do and we will obey. Obviously, it's describing again Sinai, right? The giving of the Torah, a covenant that was made at Sinai. And let's see further. Moses took the blood and threw it upon the people, and he said, behold, the blood of the covenant that Hashem sealed with you concerning all these matters. Okay? Then he tells us that the Jewish people saw Hashem, right? And then Moshe, in the next page, I'm just saying it briefly, went to the mountain, right? And Hashem gave him the he went up to the mountain and he stayed there for 40 days and 40 nights, and Hashem taught him the whole Torah. So it's very interesting. We had first the description of the giving of the Torah. Then we have a whole long list of ordinances of mitzvot. And then we go back to the story of the giving of the Torah. Why? Why are the mishpatim given between two times discussing Mount Sinai? It seems to us that the end of Parashat Mishpatim should be after the giving of the Torah, and then a list of ordinances. Why is this inserted inside? So we ask many questions. Let's sum it up very quickly. The first thing that we said is it seems that we go from a very high place of the giving of the Torah to a very low place. Commandments about slavery, murder, disrespect to parents, cursing parents, and so on and so on. Why? Why here? Okay, that's one. Second, the Torah makes a point to connect it really to Sinai with the Vav, Ve'ele HaMishpatim, and these are the ordinances. And Rashi says, the same way that the Ten Commandments were given on Sinai, these ordinances were given on Sinai as well. And we want to understand why is it important to tell us every mitzvah was given on Sinai. And we see another connection between Sinai and here. And this is that both start with slavery. The first commandment mentions slavery, and the Parasha of Mishpatim starts with slavery. Then we said, it doesn't start in the common way. It says, these are the ordinances that you will put in front of them. Not Hashem spoke to Moshe saying, as it is usually. And after all these ordinances, we go back to the giving of the Torah. And the question is, why not to finish with the giving of the Torah? The Parashat Yitro and the end of Mishpatim right after following, and then the ordinances. So these are our questions. To be able to answer the questions, I want first to bring Rashi, just to learn it on the simple level. Not so simple, nothing simple in the Torah, but on the Pshat level, based on the language of the Pesukim, right? And just to clarify what's written here, and then we'll go to a deeper idea that we want to see, and it will resolve all the questions. So, why the Vav, you read Rashi, right? Now, Asher Tasim Lifneim, that you'll put it in front of them. So Rashi says, it should be like you put in front of them a table with food on it. Very accessible, very easy, very joyful. Make it tasteful to them. Explain to them the reasons. That's what Rashi says on Tasim Lifneim. Okay? And I want to go now to the deeper level. We saw that the first topic in Mishpatim is slavery, and we were bewildered by it. So we have to understand first the concept of slavery. So we explained in the past, and I'll just say it in a sentence or two, that when we read how the Torah requires us to deal with a slave, we understand the greatness of the laws between men and men that are written in the Torah. So much is demanded from the master that our sages say that whoever buys a slave buys the master upon himself, meaning it's so difficult to satisfy him according to the Torah, not because of his demands. The Torah demands from us to do so much for a slave that nobody would do it unless the Torah suggests that this is the right thing to do. No master would buy a slave. So that's the common known explanation. I want to go deeper today. If we want to understand any topic, we have to go to the first place that it is discussed in the Torah. We mentioned it in the past, and we did it a few times in different topics. We wanted to define, to understand what the Torah refers to when the Torah speaks about the topic. So we went to the first place where it's written in the Torah, and there we found a definition and understanding of what the topic is all about. So we now want to understand slavery. So we want to go to the first place in the Torah where slavery is mentioned and reveal there what is it all about, okay? And we will go to Parashat Noach. It's page. Now, did I write it? I definitely wrote it here, which page it is. Okay, we'll find it. It's not difficult if you go to Parashat Noach. Yeah, it's page 43. We find there the concept of slavery. It's after the flood, okay? The Torah tells us these are the names of the three children of Noah who came out with him from the ark. I'm in verse number 18. Shem, Ham, and Yefet. Shem, Ham, and Yefet came out of the ark. And then the Torah tells us that Ham is the father of Canaan, right? And the Torah tells us from them, mankind started again to develop, right? Everybody was killed at the flood. From them, it's a new beginning of mankind. And then in verse number 21, the Torah tells us that Noah, I'm sorry, in 20, Noah, the man of earth, debased himself and planted a vineyard. He drank of the wine and became drunk. and he uncovered himself within his tent. Okay, that's what we learn. So Noah is in an immodest position because he's drunk. And then in the next Pasuk, Ham, the father of Canaan, saw his father's nakedness and told his two brothers outside. And Shem and Yefet took a garment, laid it upon both their shoulders, and they walked backwards and covered the father's nakedness. Their faces were turned away, and they saw not their father's nakedness. Okay? Now we are told that when Ham came in, he didn't just see. He didn't want his father to have more children. He was afraid that more children will mean to divide the world into more parts and he'll get less. So he harmed his father. He made him unable to have more children. And then in the next pasuk, Noah awoke from his wine and realized what his small son had done to him. So we understand he did something also, not just so the nakedness of his father, but he did something, right? And he said, now he reacts to it. What does he say, Noah, when he heard what happened? Cursed is Canaan, a slave of slaves, shall it be to his brothers. So here we found slavery for the first time. So Noah, as a result of what Ham did, says his son Ham, he and his children for the rest of, you know, mankind, right? For the rest of time, should be cursed. Okay, do you hear me? Or, yeah. Yeah? Do you hear me?
Yes, we hear
yes,
you.
We can hear you. We can hear you.
Okay. So here we find slavery for the first time, and we have to understand what's going on here. And interestingly enough, in our week's portion, the Rabbeinu Bechaye connects the portion of slavery in our week's portion to what happens here when slavery appears for the first time. So let's see, how does the Torah discuss this? What Ham did? So I'm going back in the Psukim. Okay, and I am back in page 43. Okay, Ham, the father of Canaan, saw his father's nakedness. So that's one verb that we have, he saw the nakedness, right? And then he went and he told his two brothers. So he saw and he told. These are the two verses that describe why Noah decided that what is suitable for him as a consequence is slavery. So we have to see what's the meaning of it. He saw and he told. There are two ways that we are able to do what we are not supposed to do. Two areas where we can fail. One is what we see, and the other one in what we say. And I want to explain. Hashem created the world, then created the Jewish nation, and gave us the Torah. When Hashem wanted to give us the Torah, the angels were against it. It's a famous midrash, not going into it, famous and on. The angel said, Torah is too holy, it should stay in Shemayim. But Hashem, anyhow, gave the Torah to human beings, to us, to the Jewish people. Why? Why really not to angels? After all, the Torah is so holy. Why to us? Because there is a purpose to the giving of the Torah, and the purpose is to bring godliness even to places that are very removed and seem even opposite to godliness. Meaning, Hashem wanted, in the terms that we quoted many times, the terms that our sages used many times, used in books, Hashem wanted a dwelling place in this physical reality. The angels are up in Shamayim, they are very holy, no question, but Hashem did not give them the Torah. Hashem wanted us to be able to be in a place that is physical and still keep the Torah, bring godliness into this physical reality. Now, what's the difference between the physical and between the spiritual? The physical in Hebrew is called chomer. Physicality, material, chomer, chet mem resh. Chomer reminds us of another word that appears in the Torah from this root, and this is chamor, a donkey. And the Maharal explains why the donkey is called chomer out of all other animals. All animals are animalistic. All animals are physical in their essence. Why is the chamor, the donkey, called chomer? So the Maharal explains, because the donkey is very passive. He doesn't take action on its own. The master puts things on his back, directs him where to go. If you compare, for example, a donkey to a horse indicates much more of his own will, right? But the donkey is very passive and he moves and acts based on what somebody outside of him does to him, directs him to do. This is the nature of the physical. The physical nature is influenced. By what is the physical influence? It's influenced by what it sees, chamso, and it is influences by what ideas are in him. By what he says, what a person says indicates what he thinks, right? So there are thoughts and external things, external thoughts and external things that can influence the physical and direct him to do things. Now, the external things and ideas that the physical absorbs can be positive and negative. When a person follows external influences, if it's thought that is expressed by speech, or desires, right, what he wants, right, and the things are negative, right, then he's basically a slave. Because what's the definition of slavery? The definition of slavery is that a person has a master over him who tells him what to do. He creates his schedule and he follows. He is not the one to initiate what he does. The schedule is done by the master. He has to be treated very well. That's a separate issue. But he is not a master. He has a master over him that tells him what to do. When a person follows his eyes and his heart and follows negative things, he's basically a slave. And this is what Ham was. Ham saw his father in an immodest position, right? Not as Shem and Yefet, who turned around and covered their father without seeing him. Ham came and saw. And not only did he see, but he followed the desire of him to have more and acted in a way that harmed his father. So two things were wrong by Ham. What he saw and what he said, what he believed in and acted upon. And that's the essence of slavery. When a person follows whatever he hears, whatever he sees, then it's negative, then it's not according to the will of Hashem. That's slavery. Now, what was the solution that Ham saw for his, I'm sorry, that Noah saw for his son? We are not speaking here about punishments. We are speaking about guidance of a father who tells his son, who has obviously physical desires to negative things in a negative way and negative ideas. He wants to tell him how to still have a meaningful life and a life that is worthwhile. So he tells him, be a slave to your brothers. Your two brothers acted properly. Accept their authority. Make them your master. You don't be the initiator. You help them. They will initiate, and you will be the one to execute what they tell you to do. That's the solution. Because if he doesn't initiate, right? If he doesn't follow what he thinks, what he feels, what he desires, but he takes advice from Shem, obviously he will be a beneficial person who has purpose in his existence. So that's what we find here in slavery for the first time. So it defines for us what is slavery, following negative thoughts or negative ideas, negative ideas or negative desires, right? And obviously, the solution is to accept a yoke of somebody that will channel it in the proper way. Okay, let's go now to the Ten Commandments. Okay, in Parashat Yitro, what we read just last week, the first Divra. Right, the first of the Ten Commandments. Okay, it's page 407. When Hashem chose the Jewish nation, what does he tell them? I am Hashem, your God, who has taken you out of the land of Egypt. We know that there were two difficulties in Egypt, major challenges in Egypt. One is that they were idol worshippers, meaning that their ideas were wrong. And second, that they were immoral, that they indulged in physical desires in the wrong way. So they were basically the children of Ham, and Mitzrayim is a descendant of Ham. They were slaves, in essence, slaves to the physical. So Hashem tells the Jewish people, I took you out of the house of Mitzrayim. And what's the meaning of it? I took you out of the house of slavery, meaning by me taking you as a nation, you became free. Meaning I am giving you a way, an ability to overcome physical desires and wrong ways of thinking. By giving you the Torah, I am elevating you above it, and I'm giving you a way will allow you, even though you have a physical part to you. You're not an angel. You are a human being who has physicality, who has a body. But I'm making you free of the slavery to the physical. Because I'm Hashem, your God. Now, at the time of the giving of the Torah, it was done by elevating the Jewish people to a level that is beyond human capacity. To comprehend, definitely to achieve. Hashem elevated them, and they had an experience that was so powerful that showed them what is real, what is not real, what is worthwhile to accept and what not. And they became, at this moment, servants of Hashem. I took you out of Mitzrayim from a house of slavery. Okay. So Rashi says, I took you out from Egypt, right? And he concludes by saying, you are servants of a king and not servant to servants, meaning you are my servants and not servants to Paro, who is a slave himself. Paro was a king. He could do whatever he wanted, but he chose to be a slave. He followed wrong ideas. He thought that he is a god and followed his physical desires and enslaved hundreds of thousands of people. Right? So I took you out of there. By the receiving of the Torah, the Jewish people became free people. Our sages say the meaning of the freedom and the giving of the Torah was that they corrected fully the sin of first men. They became free of the material to the extent that they were supposed to be immortal. It was only because of the golden calf later on that they went down a level again. But Hashem granted them freedom. And the connection to the Torah till today can give us freedom and enables us to be free people, even while we are slaves. Right? While people are in Gaza, right, in the tunnels, they can still make their own decisions and decide to keep Shabbat, not to eat treif, and so on and so on. A Jew has the capability to be free under all circumstances at all times. Okay? So from there, we are moving to Parashat Mishpatim. And the first thing that we see in our week's portion is the concept of slavery. Here is a Jew that did follow his eyes. He saw something that does not belong to him, and he took it. Obviously, he followed whatever he saw, right? And used it up and cannot even give it back. When he is caught, he cannot give it even back. So he is a person who was really a slave, right? The consequences that he is sold as a slave, meaning we give him the opportunity to learn that a Jew should not be a slave. That's why he can be a slave only for 6 years. And it's 6 years in an excellent Jewish family that the Jewish court chooses that will enable him to learn how to be a free human being who does not follow his desire. Okay, so, but the question is, why do we start with this? After all, the Jewish people just stood in front of Har Sinai. They're on such a high level. Do we have to start with stealing? Do we have to start with murder that follows after? Why? So, what we want to tell a Jew at any time, at any reality, at any situation, you followed your physicality, you followed your bad inclination, and you acted as if you would have been a physical being only. You didn't listen to the soul. But don't despair, because you experienced Sinai and you have in you the ability to become free. And the Torah will give you the way to do it. And this is why Parashat Mishpatim follows Parashat Yitro. More than this, it's a consequence. Listen to this. It seems like a contradiction in essence. It's because you stood in front of Sinai and reached such a high level that you can reach such a low. Even, God forbid, a Jew is also capable of killing. A Jew is also capable of stealing. It shouldn't happen. He's also capable of being free and following the words of Hashem all along. But he's also capable of getting to a very low point. Why? Because the whole concept of creation, as we explained, is that Hashem wants us to have a physical part. And even though we have this physical part, we should elevate it to be a tool for spirituality and not become slaves. Right? That's why the world was created for, or in other words, the world was created for us to create mastery of the soul over the body. Yes, we have physicality and spirituality, but the soul has to be the master and the body has to be the slave who executes. But they have to be, and that's what I am aiming for, they have to be equally powerful. Because if the soul, that obviously sells us the truth, the real, the substance, will be stronger than the body, we won't have free choice. Who will follow the body? Who will follow physicality? So we have to have strong desires in us. We have to have the possibility to believe in false ideas and still overcome it. This is what our sages say. Kol ha-gadol mechavero, whoever is greater than his friend, will have also a greater bad inclination. It's rogadol. Because if a righteous person will be presented with the challenges of a very low-level person, he won't even consider them. He won't exercise free choice because it won't be a choice for him even. He looks at it as something so low and so impossible for him that it won't even be a choice. So the higher we are, the harder tests, spiritual tests, are put in front of us. And we should not be discouraged by it. It's very interesting. Many times when we pass a test, we are presented with the harder test. And I'm speaking about spiritual tests. And why so? You conquer territory already. You can go higher, right? Now that you've strengthened yourself by conquering territory, you are capable of withstanding a higher test. So the Torah starts the laws of between men and men with things that indicate a very low level. But tell us, it's a possibility. What was very hard for the Jewish people at the moment of Sinai to think about. To them at the moment, it didn't seem like a possibility. But Hashem tells them, you do have a physical part. And you can get very low and you have to be on the alert. And if you failed, to whatever level, at whatever time, to whatever degree, don't despair. In essence, you are a free person because you are mine. When I took you out of Egypt, I took you out of slavery, not only physically, but spiritually. You became the servants of me. I am the master and you are the servants. And being that this is the case, you can overcome everything, don't despair. A person stole, very low level. There is a plan here to help him how to get out of it. Now, we know that a slave can be a slave only for 6 years. On the seventh year, he has to go free. But there is still a possibility that he'll remain a slave after 6 years if he wants to stay. If he says, and we have it a little later, right? If he says, I want to stay, right? I want to stay. I love it by my master because he has really excellent conditions and no worries. The responsibility is the master's. So he wants to stay. We let him stay, but not forever. Only till the Jubilee year. And there is something that has to be done before. And this is, we take him to the opening, yeah, the door opening, and we pierce his ear on the doorposts. And why? What does it remind us? The doorposts, connecting to the topics that we are discussing. Hashem took the Jewish people out of Egypt of slavery. The act of coming out of slavery started in Egypt. The last thing in Egypt itself that freed them from the slavery was the fact that Hashem told them to take a ship, put it for 4 days at their house, right, and then slaughter it at the night of Pesach, the night of the redemption, and put the blood on the doorposts, on the outside. Now, this was very courageous, because as we know, and it's a famous thing that happened, it was the God of the Egyptians. The ship are the gods of the Egyptians to slaughter it and place the blood on the doorposts outside indicated that the Jewish people became free of the Egyptians, free of their way of thinking. They slaughtered their idol and free of the fear. What made them able to do it? It's the fact that they became the servants of Hashem. When you have a higher master, you have a human master and you have a higher master, you are capable to be the servant of the higher master, and then you are not afraid of the human master that you have over you, and you don't follow in his ways. You have the strength to stand on your own beliefs, right, and follow them. It's very interesting. In addition to the fact that the Torah discusses the Jewish slave, the Torah also discusses the laws that apply to a non-Jewish slave. If a Jew buys a non-Jewish slave, there are laws that he has to follow there too. And one of the laws is that, as it's written in page 423, verse number 26. 423, verse number 26. The Torah says as follows. If a man shall strike the eye of his slave or the eye of his maidservant and destroy it, he shall set him free in return for his eyes. And if he knocks out the tooth of his slave or the tooth of his maidservant, he shall set him free in return for his tooth. Now, this does not apply to a Jewish slave. This is only a non-Jewish slave. And he has an additional way to become free that a Jewish slave doesn't have. And this is if his master hits him, strikes him in a way that destroys a limb. Now, the Torah says, an eye or a tooth. Rashi explains that it's not only an eye or a tooth. There are 24 parts of the body that if the master destroys, he has to free the slave. For example, the 10 fingers of the hands, the nose, an ear, the 10 fingers, the 10 toes of his feet, right? So it's not only an eye and a tooth, but the Torah chooses as an example of all of them, the eye and the tooth. And if you look at it, it reminds us of the story of Ham. What did Ham do? He saw and he spoke. An eye sees, and the tooth is the ability to speak. It indicates what the person thinks. So if a Jew destroys these capabilities by his slave, he has to send him free. Because by the fact that he lost the eye or lost the tooth, he already is free of slavery. Okay? So as we see, slavery is much larger, a much larger concept than a person who stole and has to physically be a slave for 6 years and be treated in a particular way. Slavery is what the human being is all about. He is a human being who can become a slave, and he has a choice. A slave to whom? A slave to Hashem, or a slave to external forces that are negative. thoughts and desires, that he sees, hears, right? And if he follows them, he can become a slave to the physical rather than slavery to Hashem. So it's quite a difficult task not to be a slave. Obviously, there are many different levels of not being a slave. The ultimate is no matter what you see, no matter what is presented to you as philosophies or thoughts, you are not affected at all. And everything you do the way Hashem wants you to do. That's total freedom, right? There are endless levels to it, right? And obviously, we have to work on it all our life. And it's not an easy task. The proof is that we fail from time to time, right? We don't always do exactly what Hashem wants us to do. We work on it. We aim to be there. But it's a lifetime job. What ensures that we will be able to do it? How does Hashem help us to be able to do it? First, we are told that before Hashem created the world, the Torah was created, and the idea of the Jewish nation was already there. In the beginning, Bereshit bara Elokim et hashamayim ve'et ha'aretz, Bereshit, in the beginning, Hashem created heaven and earth. Rashi says there are two things that are called Reshit, a beginning, that were there before creation. And this is Torah and the Jewish people, the thought of the Jewish people. Meaning, Hashem established Torah and the Jewish people as the purpose of creation. And they were there before the world was created. What means, in other words, that we are not bound to the laws of nature. And we can rise above the natural things that entice us. Thoughts, ideas, desires. Yes, it's part of our nature, but we are not bound to it. We can go beyond them because we were there before the world was created, before the laws of nature were put into place. What means we have the capability to do it. Other things help us. When we were at Sinai, Hashem asked us if we want to receive the Torah, and we said, we'll do. The we'll do, we said before the receiving of the Torah. We'll do and obey is written only in Parashat Mishpatim. The famous Na'aseh v'nishma, we'll do and then we'll hear, is not written before Mount Sinai. Over there, it's written only we'll do. The Na'aseh v'nishma, the famous Na'aseh v'nishma, we'll do and obey, we'll do and hear, is written after all these laws. And this indicates to us what will be our way to be able to accomplish freedom, total freedom, to be free people. And these are the mitzvot. We accepted upon ourselves to do before the giving of the Torah. We didn't even ask for explanations. We'll do. As a result of it, Hashem says, put these laws between men and men mainly, that are written in Parashat Mishpatim, in front of them. Make them tasteful for them. Make them clear to them. Like a table that you set in front of people. That's how we explain the language. Asher tasim lifneim, that you should put in front of them rather than Hashem said to Moshe, Hashem spoke to Moshe saying, if you accept upon yourself to do, meaning if you make yourself make a decision to be a servant of Hashem, and you keep the mitzvot, this itself will help you to be able to become free. Because when we do, just because Hashem said so, he gives us later on the flavor and the taste and the elevation and fills us with holiness. And this holiness strengthens the positive force inside us. And then we can overcome even more challenges, even greater challenges. So we are not alone in the process. Hashem gave us what helps us to do it. A, the Torah and the Jewish people are not bound to the laws of nature. They were created before. Second, he gave us a set of behaviors that will bring into ourselves more godliness, more holiness, and then we'll be more capable of being free. What his word also has ways to help us is the fact that we swore at Sinai that we will do. And before a person is born, he is sworn to do the right thing. Our sages say that when a person is in the womb, before he is born, the whole Torah is taught to him. He has full clarity. When he is born, it's forgotten. But before he is born, he is sworn to follow the clarity that he gained while he was in the womb. And even though we forget it, but it's somewhere in our DNA. The same way that even though we physically were not at Sinai, only spiritually, it's in our genes. And that's why we have the capability to do it. More than this. The Jewish nation did not start at Sinai. It was a process of many, many years, starting from Abraham. Abraham, Yitzhak, Yaakov, the tribes, the 210 years in Egypt, all of it strengthened our DNA, put more godliness into our DNA. And this is another source of strength that is with us at a time of a test. An example from the Tanakh, when Yosef was tested by Eshet Potiphar, what did he see in front of him? His father Yaakov. And concentrating on Yaakov and his holiness and who he is, gave him the strength to overcome. So we have a long history with many great people all through this history, including our own time, our great people today too. And clinging to them, trying to follow in their footsteps, studying about them is another way that can help us overcome when we are tested. And the last thing that he discussed in this week's portion that I want to mention, much more is discussed, but what I want to mention, because it's another means that helps us to do the right thing, is the concept of Shabbat. Shabbat and the holidays, even though the portion speaks mainly about between men and men, it's a training program of how to behave between men and men, and in this way to refine ourselves and add godliness to us. The Torah also discusses Shabbat and holidays that are between men and Hashem in this week's portion. Among a few other things between men and Hashem. And why? Because the only way that we can overcome tests, even when they are very difficult, it's if we take Hashem upon ourselves as a master and cling to him, as happens on Shabbat and holidays. These are times that we dedicate to our relationship with Hashem. Because when we go through the list of between men and men in the portion of Mishpatim, we'll see that many of the topics will appear in any code of law. But the standards that are required of us is really a godly standard. I'll give two very short examples. One is the obligation to lend money to another Jew if we have the ability to do so. No other code of law has the obligation to lend money to somebody. If he doesn't pay back and we take a collateral and he's a poor person, he doesn't have money to pay back. So you take a blanket as a collateral, doesn't have valuable things. You can have it during the day, but before night, you have to give it back. And in the morning to go again and take it. Obviously, it's a level that is way, way beyond. I did a favor to this person, I lend him money, what no other code of law will obligate me to do. He didn't pay back. I have the right at least to all the collateral. Yes, but I have to treat him like a brother and to be godly, to overcome my resentment, to overcome my anger, and to treat him in a very, very gentle way. This is beyond human nature, but we are capable of it. So Hashem demands a lot from us. And all that is written here is part of the covenant. It was given at Sinai, meaning it's on the level of Sinai. And that's why the covenant that was made on Sinai is written after to include all of it, to tell us you had a very high point, right? You can reach lows, no question, because you have free choice. But you have many means that can elevate you and bring you back to where you are supposed to be and reinforce the covenant between you and Hashem. Okay, we'll finish here and I'll open to questions.
Before we open for questions, I want to announce the class is Le'ilu Nishmas, Meir Chaya Nechama Bracha, Bas David Mordechai. I will open for questions. All right, ladies, you should be able to unmute yourselves. Good.
Anyone?
So does a Jewish person go willingly to look for a Jewish slave, or they're just assigned by a court because they're special people and they have to
No.
take them?
No, it's the court who chooses an ideal family, and it's a rehabilitation.
So they
And the
don't
family
necessarily
should
have a
be
choice. Do
capable of
they
it.
have a choice? They have no
The
choice.
family has a choice,
They do
yes.
have a choice.
But the one who will choose will be the court because it has to be a very, very special family. When you read all the obligations that the master has,
Right, it's a
it's only
rehabilitation
somebody who
program for
is
him.
very, very kind, who is ready to bring a thief into his house and make sure that he'll go out as a free person who stands on his own 2 feet, financially and spiritually.
But just to buy a Goyish slave, you can just go to a slave market and buy one?
It doesn't have to be in a slave market, right? It could be an ad in the paper. I'm looking for somebody. These are the conditions.
Well, there'll
And
be a servant or so a paid servant. A slave is a
yeah,
paid servant.
but he sold to him forever. This is part of the agreement. It's a specific case that is discussed. These are the ways to acquire. These are the way to treat, right? But it is a possibility.
There's also a possibility that the Jewish owner is going to hurt him. You wouldn't that would never happen to a Jewish slave.
That what?
It would never happen to a Jewish slave that the owner should hurt him. That would never happen.
We hope not.
We
You
I
know,
mean, we hope
everybody
not. He's
has
a
a free
person with
choice,
choice, but
right? But it's a person of caliber that it shouldn't happen, should never happen.
right. Okay, thank you so much. So
Sure. If you want to hear more about slavery, we have a class on the website discussing in detail the laws and how they ensure that a slave will be really coming out as a free person, spiritually and physically, and what it requires of the master.
I was looking last week on the website to see if I could find the one that compared the Aseret HaDibros to the Makos, but I couldn't
And you
find it.
didn't find?
No.
Okay, let me look into it.
Okay, thank you so much.
Okay, sure. Okay.
Okay, I have a question that is not exactly on the topic that the Rebbetzin spoke of, but it's always bothered me that the part about how the master can have the Jewish slave be intimate with a non-Jewish woman, especially and one of the requirements is that he's married actually, to in order so that he could have more slaves, but it's just I don't understand such kedusha and the intimacy and to be with a goyish woman. I don't get it.
Okay. Obviously, there are many preconditions for being able to do it. Okay. If a person came as a single person, you cannot do it. It's only if a person is married, right? And it's indicating to the slave that he really became a person that doesn't act like a Jew. And we don't give him any responsibility for it, right? And it doesn't mean that the master does it. He has the possibility to do it, but he doesn't have to do it, right? But it's a way to indicate, right? Where did you get, right? Now, it doesn't affect his marriage. The other way around, the master at the same time must take care of all the needs of his Jewish family, even if it costs him more than what he will gain from the work of the slave, way, way beyond. Doesn't matter. Right? So it's more an educational thing.
But I mean, there's also mention that he could be emotionally connected to her and maybe, you know, doesn't want, you know, and I'm wondering about the wife. How does she feel about this? It's just, it's so complicated.
See, no Jew will do something that is wrong when it's wrong. If the master is a very, very righteous person, what he must be, right? If he'll do it, he'll do it because he feels that it will serve the slave and his family. Right? It's only a possibility. Like many things in the Torah, even though it's written, like Ben Sorer Moreh, a child who is killed because he eats a lot of meat and steals and so on, and it's not things that we deserve this penalty for, it, right? And our sages say it never happened, right? But it indicates a concept.
Okay.
Okay, we'll finish here. See you next week in your session. Kol tov.
Thank you so much again.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.